Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. All right, we are often imitated, but never duplicated. Let's get straight to the docket today. The attorneys for Barry Morphew, they came out swinging at a hearing today. Did they get what they wanted? Second, Paul and Maggie Murdaugh case update. Let's talk dying declarations. A pastor helping a friend in need. What happens when your 12-year-old girlfriend delivers a baby? And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. Now, if you haven't done so, please hit that subscribe button and also hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. All right. And also, if you can't watch us on YouTube, Facebook, you can also listen to us by downloading us on your favorite app. All right. Let's get to it. First on the docket, Barry Morphew had a hearing today. Well, his case did. He wasn't present. But his attorneys appeared via WebEx, and the prosecutors were in the courtroom as well as the judge. And the hearing was set for the issue regarding discovery violations because we have a preliminary hearing set here in just about 8 days. Is that hearing going to take place? According to the defense, they wanted to. Now, the prosecutor in this particular case says that he is going to call perhaps 18 witnesses for the preliminary hearing. The DA also thinks that he's not sure if he's going to call them all. And frankly, he has no obligation under the law here in Colorado to tell the defense who he's going to call. But he said, I'm identifying at least 18. The defense says, hey, 18 witnesses over 4 days, not going to be enough time for us, Judge. We need to equally divide the time up so that each side has a right to present witnesses if we want to. Remember, the defense never has to present any witnesses at all. The judge says, no, we're not going to do that. So let's get to the hearing. Now, this hearing today was on WebEx. I would have liked to have brought it to you on our page today. But guess what? You're not supposed to be doing that pursuant to the court order. And since I am an officer of the court, I have to follow court orders. So if I were to put that up on video on our channel here, that's right, I could be held in contempt. And guess what? There were a couple people that did put it up on YouTube. Guess what? You could be held in contempt, but you're in luck. When you're held in contempt, or at least you receive the show cause to be held in contempt, call me, all right? I'm a Colorado attorney. We can help represent you. Just bring the retainer check. All right. So what else did they talk about at this hearing? Lots of stuff. This case is massive. And the Barry Morphew case is massive because of all the data that is being downloaded and dumped to the prosecution. Now, the defense was very well prepared. They filed a motion and basically saying, hey, Judge, the prosecutor is not turning over everything that they're supposed to. What they've turned over to us, a lot of it we can't get work. We can't have our experts access it. And so there's a problem. And we're entitled to this information. So please give it to us now. Oh, and by the way, Judge, the prosecutor is so bad at their job, you should impose a sanction. Now, one could ask that the case be dismissed, and the defense said, well, that won't happen. And they also said you could reduce the charge from first-degree murder, second-degree murder, Judge. But let's face it, that wasn't going to happen. But what they really wanted and what became very evident in their argument is they want Barry Morphew released on a bond, and that's what they requested for the violations for discovery that they were alleging. And guess what? The judge even said, yep, there were some discovery violations. So let's talk about it. There's an organization here in Colorado called the Rocky Mountain Regional Forensic Computer Lab. And what they do is they get information and they basically search phones, computers, anything that's kind of technical in nature. And It's sent in via request by the agency here in Colorado, and then they send it back based upon the limitations of the search warrant. Well, the defense says that 12 devices have been sent to the lab, specifically Barry Morphew's phone, Macy, Mallory, an iPad, as well as some iCloud information that apparently the defense just received, which related to Suzanne Morphew's iCloud account. But the defense is saying that there are at least another 8 items that have been examined, and they haven't received any specific discovery on it. That's referring to some laptops, a Toshiba, a Dell laptop as well as a MacBook Pro. The defense says, hey, we're entitled to this. We're doing everything we can. We've retained experts. We're jumping through all the hoops so that we can be ready to go with this preliminary hearing, because they hopefully want to show that there's no probable cause, or at least no proof evident presumption great, so that a bond can be set at that hearing. And the defense argument is the prosecution has no clue what's going on. And I'm going to have to admit, the prosecution seemed a little flat-footed. It's not like they didn't know this issue was coming up today. They set a hearing based upon a motion. And nearly every time that the judge inquired and asked directly of the district attorney, what's the status of this? All they could really say is, I don't know. And several times during the hearing, all the prosecutor has to say for themselves was, judge, it's a really big case. We're really not used to working with all these big federal agencies that start with, you know, FBI and things like that. And, you know, we've reached out to them and they know this is important, et cetera. And we're getting it to them as quick as we can. We're not even looking at ourselves. And frankly, the DA said numerous times he didn't even know what was in the discovery yet. Now, this should show the fact that the district attorney doesn't know all the discovery, and I don't expect him to know every page of it. There's too much of it. I get that. But you're the district attorney, and the elected district attorney chose to file this case after a year-long investigation. Why all this information wasn't ready to go when charges were filed, frankly, makes the district attorney's office look, well, unprepared, unprofessional, and not ready for this case to proceed. That's not good. And as you could see, the attorneys for Mr. Morphew, Iris Eaton and Drew Nielsen, they're ready to go. They are all over this, and it ought to be a very interesting preliminary hearing for sure. And what argument did the defense make that, you know, Ms. Eaton made a very compelling argument, judge, and saying, hey, judge, we're asking you to do something. We want you to impose sanctions. And they listed off several cases where sanctions had been imposed against the district attorney's office for not complying with discovery. And the reason why the defense did that was because they wanted to tell the judge, hey, judge, you're not going out on a limb. This is something that happens all the time. So don't be afraid to do this. And I went through what they asked for, which was basically, you know, they know they're not going to get dismissal of the case, but they said, hey, judge, you could reduce the charge. But more importantly, what they wanted was a bond. And the reason why they want a bond is because the defendant waived his right to a preliminary hearing within 35 days with the understanding that all this information was going to be provided to the defense that they could review, investigate, and prepare for this hearing. And here we are, less than 2 weeks from the hearing, and the prosecution is turning over 5 discs as of yesterday. And the defense argued that possibly the DA was moving, you know, trying to get a continuance because basically nothing was done and by delaying the discovery. Of course, the district attorney denied it, but frankly, all his responses were pretty weak. And fortunately, the prosecution had the judge on his side in this particular case. The court did find that the prosecution had violated on at least 2 occasions the court's orders to turn over discovery. However, the judge found that it was not a willful and wanton violation and acknowledged that it's a big case, a lot of discovery. But the judge seemed to indicate that, hey, prosecutor, you better get your act together. In fact, he said, Mr. Prosecutor, why don't you file with the court a status report as to these 9 devices, of whether they've been examined. There's also an issue of a cell phone search regarding a witness of MG, which is apparently the phone had been searched but hadn't been turned over. And then also there was a phone or a recording device, a pen device, that apparently somebody recorded, and it almost sounded like it was perhaps Suzanne Morphew, but the recording was terrible. But the FBI enhanced that recording, and the defense hasn't received it yet. And the judge ordered, you need to produce that within 7 days. And Mr. District Attorney, get me all this information so I can make an appropriate record as to why this isn't a pattern. And the judge said, if a pattern develops, he'll look at sanctions. But as of right now, yes, there are violations, but basically no sanctions. Welcome to the world of criminal defense. It's frustrating sometimes. You're right. The prosecution should turn this stuff over, and they delay it. It's not like it was a homicide that occurred that same day. They charged somebody the following day. The prosecution had a year. Making them look a little unprepared, disorganized, that lead detective on the case better get his act together, because I'm telling you, Miss Eaton and Miss Nielsen, they will chew up the other side. They are very, very good attorneys, mark my word. They're going in swinging at every hearing just like they did today. So no sanctions. Oh, and by the way, the hearing, the preliminary hearing, will not be via WebEx because the court is going to allow people to be in the courtroom. And he basically said that this was not one of the hearings that qualifies for the press to provide expanded media coverage. So the judge said he's not going to allow this to be on WebEx. And it is not a hearing where expanded media coverage is allowed. Therefore, no hearing next time. So we may just have to try to attend. We'll see what takes place there. Interesting hearing. Definitely can see the tactic that the defense is taking, which is they are going to overwhelm the prosecutor. Because guess what? When the prosecutor is out there looking for documents and running around trying to see if they've turned everything over, which is their job and their duty to do so, they're not preparing for their case. So we'll see. Next on the docket, an update on the Paul and Maggie Murdaugh case. And the information that brings us today is we've learned some information regarding the BAC of young Paul Murdaugh when he was involved in that boating accident. That's right. After some search warrants were obtained for the medical records, it was determined that Paul Murdaugh's BAC was a 0.286. Now, the police kind of dragged their feet. Maybe it was confusion. Maybe it was trying to give some preferential treatment to the young Mr. Murdaugh. However, nothing was done as it relates to Mr. Murdaugh. And by the time the police had arrived at the hospital, it also appears that so had Mr. Murdaugh's father and grandfather, who were experienced prosecutors and basically didn't cooperate and make any statement. Oh, so I guess it's not just me that says to do that. Yeah, but that BAC is a 0.286. That is 3 times the legal limit. Now, some photographs were also turned over, which shows where the young Paul Murdaugh and his friends were getting off the boat. They were in downtown Beaufort. Beautiful. Been there many, many times. In fact, when I was down there just a couple months ago, walked that same little area down by the downtown area, and it shows him with all his friends. There's pictures of him in the bar and them leaving, and also the bridge that they hit. And can you imagine completely basically pitch dark at night down there trying to find people that have been thrown from the boat? Not a good situation. Now, there's still no update on any suspects as it relates to who may be responsible for the death of Paul and Maggie Murdaugh, and we'll keep you apprised of any future developments. And one more thing as it relates to the Barry Morphew case is that the judge says, nope, I'm still not going to release the affidavit in this case. Unprecedented. I don't think it's right. The attorneys that argued that for some local journalistic organizations made some very well-reasoned arguments. But that's what you get when judges make up their mind. They rarely change their mind because why? They don't want to appear to be wishy-washy, even if they're wrong, and they'll say, hey, take me up on appeal. Hopefully, the news media organizations will take the judge up on appeal and have that affidavit for the arrest warrant released to the public as quickly as possible, because we have just as much right to know in the public as what's going on in the courts as anybody. All right, next on the docket, the other night on our live, we discussed hearsay. A lot of people say, oh, that's hearsay, but they don't really understand what it is. Basically, it's an out-of-court statement by another being offered for the truth of the matter asserted. And I also told you there are a bunch of exceptions. And one of the exceptions to the hearsay rule is a dying declaration. Let me give you an example of a dying declaration, all right? A Texas woman is now behind bars because they allege that she intentionally shot her husband just Tuesday night. Jacqueline Thomas has been charged with a first-degree murder of Eugene Liger, who was at their home, and also at home was a five-month-old child. Well, the police responded to the residence about 3 a.m., basically that shots were fired. And when the police officers arrived and questioned Ms. Thomas, she said that the shooting was accidental. However, the victim in this little case, Mr. Eugene Liger, was sitting there, and his dying words to the police officers were, that's right, it was no accident, she shot me. Now, normally at trial, those statements wouldn't come in. They wouldn't come in because the person wouldn't be there to be subject to cross-examination. But a dying declaration is exactly for this type of situation. And not that we're counseling anybody, but I'm sure that Ms. Thomas probably wishes that she hadn't called the police on time because otherwise she probably would have got away with it. Bottom line. You know, every now and then you still think that there's still good in the world. For example, there was this Texas pastor that rented a room down in Texas the other day. And he basically told the clerk at the hotel that he was renting the room for a parishioner in need. Well, it turned out that wasn't exactly the case and kind of destroys your faith in humanity. It turns out that the pastor, Brian Pounds, wasn't just renting the room for somebody in need. Apparently, the needs were all his. That's right, his sexual needs. Because he was engaging in extracurricular activities with a 15-year-old and also providing refreshments in the form of methamphetamine. That's right. Not good. Illegal. And that's why the good pastor, Brian Pound, is in custody on a $300,000 bond. I don't think he'll be going back to the church. That's right. How many times have I said it? Everybody should have access to a background subscription search because lots of people hide lots of information that could be embarrassing about themselves. Where's the place to find it? CrimeTalkSearch.com. Let's take a quick break. Please go to CrimeTalkSearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right, next on the docket, let's play a little game. What happens when your 12-year-old girlfriend gives birth? Our first contestant, Juan Miranda Yara, 24 years old. He learned what happened down in Tulsa the other day. That's right. When a 12-year-old gives birth at a hospital, The police are called. Why? 12-year-olds aren't supposed to be engaging in any conduct that could get them impregnated. Uh-huh, that's right. Well, Mr. Miranda Jara, he is now in custody for lots of things, okay? You can't do it. The age of consent in Oklahoma is apparently 16. So there's a 10 years age difference. Can't do this. Now, a little side note, I did this trial once. It was one of the worst trials I had ever done. All right. Very similar situation. Someone in their 20s gets somebody in their early tweens impregnated. And of course, hospital gets called. DNA tests are done. People are charged. You think you've resolved it to everybody's satisfaction. And no, at the last minute, the client says he wants his day in court. And so you have your day in court thinking, what are we going to tell the people? Is it the DNA evidence? Is it her coming to court to say that's the man that did it? Oh, no, no, no. There was no truth other than to show that, you know, I don't know. It was the worst trial I've ever done. Probably the shortest guilty verdict I've ever had in my life. Well, we can talk about that some other time. All right. So rule of thumb, don't have sex with 12-year-olds. Best legal advice you're going to get today. If it's not common sense, you never know. All right. Finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. So a gentleman down in Florida, he's retired and he was returning back to his home, and his name is Mr. James Clark, and he is not a dumb criminal. In fact, he is a good Samaritan, I guess. He's returning home and he notices that he sees some clothing by the pool near his house. He becomes more suspicious. He finds somebody skinny dipping in his pool who he's never met before, has no idea who she might be. Well, so he calls the police. And who did the police find skinny dipping in this pool? 42-year-old Heather Kennedy. Now, the police basically asked her to leave and get out of the pool. She wouldn't, and then became somewhat resistant to law enforcement trying to arrest her for trespassing. No one's exactly sure how or why Miss Kennedy was at the pool of Mr. Clark. And my guess is when Miss Kennedy probably comes off the illegal narcotics that she was on, that she's not going to know either. Now, and I say that because we know that Miss Kennedy had been convicted earlier on some felony or narcotics charges. And when she was arrested, she had pills that included morphine pills, marijuana, crack, meth, and some pipes as well. And when she was arrested on that particular occasion, she said none of the pills were hers, that they were the property of a man that goes by the name of Crackhead Chris. Ah, Crackhead Chris. Kind of reminds me of like the guy named Dude. That's right. Everybody blames Dude. That's not mine. It was Dude. I didn't do it. It was Dude. Dude just left. And guess who's actually represented? Dude. That's right. This guy. The guy legally changed his name to Dude. I'm like, do you realize how many crimes that you've been accused of doing? I hope you have some good alibis, Dude. Well, Crackhead Chris and Dude, you're in the same category. But today it is Miss Kennedy who is our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And if she is the winner of the dumb criminal contestant of the week, that's right, she will receive a Crime Talk mug sent to her. Maybe she can take it swimming, maybe to the beach, maybe leave some clothes on. All right. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.